This week is Parshas Truma, and Parshas Truma can be found in the Arash Chumash on page 444. I love that. 444. Parshas Truma deals mostly with the Truma, with the donations which were going to be made in order to build the Mishkan. It's an interesting question as to when Parshas Truma was told to Moshe, and when, of course, he transmitted this information to the Bnei Israel. There's a machlokes amongst the authorities whether Truma was given prior to the event of the golden calf. In other words, it must have been while Moshe is already on the mountain, or if it came as a result of the golden calf. In other words, this is a tikkun. You guys think you know how to use gold, you use gold totally in the wrong way. So this is how you're supposed to use gold with God's instruction. So the parsha begins. It's interesting. I did not give you this, but the Or HaChaim begins on that issue. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, daber el bnei Yisrael. What do you mean? Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, daber el bnei Yisrael. That's what lemor means. I tell them the following. Daber el bnei Yisrael. So he asks about that, but I didn't give it to you. V'yichuli truma, and they should take from each truma. He also goes into the question of what's v'yichul, the difference between v'yichul, you should take, versus the people who should be giving. Me'ez kol ish asher yidvenu libo techuas trumasi, from each person who wants to give a nedava, right? Nedava means that their heart drives them to want to give. Tikhuas trumasi, so you have to take it, or they're going to be giving it. Which one is it? And then zosa truma shetchumei tam zahava chesef u'nechoshes. And then it says, this is the truma, these are the donations that you're going to be taking from them. And then it begins listing some of the precious metals, and then it goes on to give all the lists. And one of the points that the Or HaChaim makes is that the nedavos, the people who are going to be giving, had to come from all of these different kinds of materials. It couldn't just be like nowadays, right? Let's say we're building the building, right? So when we build a building, so what does everybody contribute?
Money.
Right, mezuman, money, everybody gives cash, everybody gives check, whatever it may be. And that's the way we do it now. And then we just hire the contractor and we tell the contractor, here's the kind of stuff that we need, and you go ahead and buy it. Right? That's typically the way this kind of stuff is done. Everybody's donation is money. But what if there's a guy who owns a business and he actually has drywall, or he has metal, or he has whatever it is that the kind of material, somebody owns a tile store. I'm saying, could he give that as donation? And the answer would be, absolutely, right? You know, that's your donation, so that cuts off on our costs. So we don't have to. So the point is that the first point that he brings out here is that in order to do the truma properly, people all needed to contribute in whichever way. So I'll tell you the thing that I found here, and this is the first one that I put in italics, is the first section here. I think this is the one that I wanted to. Yeah. Okay. So I accidentally did not bring my thing with all my notes on. Okay. So I think that this is the point that I wanted to bring out to you. If you look in the first section on page one, you see the part which is in bold. It says "Deskaven akasu l'ravos kima pratim." Okay, he says that there are three groups that could be making contributions here. What are the Yisomim?
Orphans.
Orphans. What are orphans? People whose parent passed away. Maybe they have something, maybe they have nothing. It depends on if they inherited. But presumably they have the least. That's why the Torah mentioned so many times that you need to take care of the Yisomim. The Ger Yasom and Almana. The Yasom is the one who doesn't have. Nashim, what are women? So they may have, they may not have,
they're
right?
They're in control of their husbands.
Right. What?
They're in control of their husbands.
They're in control of their husbands?
I mean, their husbands control them.
Right. Well, not control them, but their property is assigned, in a sense, to their husbands. But it really depends, what they have. Do they have something from Maase Atzman, like from their own doing? Do they inherit something, etc.? So he goes through and says that, based on what these people have is what you can expect from them. The Yisomim, he says, basically nothing. Women, very little. Again, this is not talking about now. We're talking about the generation of the Midbar. Okay? And then the Shoah. Shoah means wealthy. Wealthy. So those are the people who, presumably, are going to give the most. Now, I'm just going to tell you a very quick story. that I was thinking, that occurred to me when I was reading this. If you look at the very end of that first paragraph, you see, "Begimla ribuim yisom nashim shoa." He says, "Ace." Remember the phrase that we're talking about? "Ace kol isha sheid ben elibo." Ace includes women. "Kol," the rabbis yisom, includes the orphans. "Isha sheid ben elibo," the man who's going to be giving the donations. "And shoa," that's the wealthy. Okay, so he says that they're each contributing kifi yecholtam, whatever they can do. So I was thinking about this. In the next paragraph, by the way, he talks about how there are those who say that the Mishkan was a kapara for the eagle, right? That's, you can see that in the first line. Okay, but anyway, the point that I wanted to bring out from here is this story. I remember a number of years ago, I was visiting a certain city in the United States, which happens to be the home of a pretty well-known gevir. We'll just leave it at that. And they were building a new shul. And this wealthy individual could have built the whole shul. Okay? Like, no problem. Really no problem. Really no problem. And we stayed in the house of just a member of the shul. And they told us that in this building of the new shul, what they were asking for people to do is to really make a commitment and to donate. And, you know, this individual will cover everything else. And why were they doing it that way? Because they wanted everybody to feel like they had a vested interest. Because if he, you know, if the wealthy individual just wrote a check, then people wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't appreciate it in the same way. They wouldn't appreciate it in the same way. And the family that I stayed with, I remember them telling me, they said, "We are making the biggest donation of our lives into this shul." So I thought that it was just a fascinating perspective because you know there's an element of truth to that. That what you may call ish asher venali, well, forget about ish, right? Forget about person, forget about man. May call ish anybody who has a vested interest. I remember I get some of these arguments you hear nowadays about people getting things for free. It says when you get things for free, you don't appreciate it.
No.
Give something. Forget about, you know, I'm not even talking into politics and political agendas and everything. But the point is that people having nidvas lev, wanting to have that kind of connection through giving a donation, that's what makes it real.
Beautiful.
Okay, so the next thing is Vezosa Truma, Pasuk Gimel. Okay, Vezosa Truma. So Vezosa Truma, this is the Truma that you're supposed to take. And it lists all of the items that are needed and necessary for the building of the Mishkan. And of course, when you read through Parshas Truma, you see how each of these things is utilized. Whether it's the gold for the inside vessels or the wood, also for the inside vessels and the outside vessels and the crushing. Whether it's all the different material which is woven, either to be the parochas, the curtains, or the masach, right, the outside curtain, or the cover for the Mishkan, the ohel, the different oils, the different stones which went on the choshen, etc. So we get a sense of how all of these things are going to be utilized. So the Or HaChaim, though, focuses on the word vizos. Vizos ha-truma, vizos. And this is the truma that you have to take. Take a look what he says. Bottom page one. Ulai tamom ro vizos, ulai shechavinu ha-shaloi b'yishon adava. This is it. So yeah, whatever I said before was you know the beginning of it. Like he planted the seeds, but he goes into it in a little more detail here. That the people need to give from everything. They don't fulfill their obligation unless they brought a little bit of everything. And this is why it says vizos. Aside from the fact that you just need to give, you need to contribute. You need to give actually from all of the things which are necessary. Because the preparation for the Mishkan is not complete if there's anything missing. Turn the page. It's not saying that everybody needs to bring a little bit of. Everybody needs to bring a little bit. It's a hub, a little chesed, a choshes. Not that means that. You call me new. And somehow it needs to be a sign, right? Like, how do we do it in the shul? We'd have a sign-up sheet. Who's bringing Zahav? Who's bringing the Kesev? Who's bringing the Nechoshes? Who has goats? You could bring some goat skin. Who has some wood? You could bring some wood. Who has stones? You could bring the stones. Just sign up so we know. Right? It's like when people have a Mishnayos. Right? It just needs to all get done. Who cares who's doing this one, this one, this one, this one, this one? It just needs to all get done. Oh, you're telemar. She kablu mevi and call you gimel medium. Below you zalzel maybe pishtan baros. They're basically saying, look, these are what we have. Okay, so you can come. Look, there's a table for sheish marshazor. There's a table for tchelas. There's a table. Just bring from each, and nobody's judging you where you're bringing, where you're dropping things off. But you know, everybody come in, drop it off at the table where they're collecting this particular item, and there you go. Okay, and that goes back to that little mushel that I gave before. You know, it was a true story about how everybody is making a contribution, each kafiyah chaltan, everybody according to their ability. Okay, then after listing all the items, the Torah goes on to the next pasuk, which is v'asuli mikdash v'shachanti v'socham. Okay, this is the most famous pasuk in the parsha. You're going to make for me a mikdash, and I will dwell in them. Now, hold on a second. What was this thing called beforehand? V'asuli mikdash, right? Look at the next pasuk. Like everything I've been making to you, the structure of the Mishkan and the structure of all the Kelim, that's what you're supposed to do.
Mikdash to Mishkan.
Right, so, right, exactly. That's the question. Is it a Mikdash or is it a Mishkan? Okay? Okay, well, so first of all, what is the difference between a Mishkan and a Mikdash? Okay, Mishkan is travel, and Mikdash is
Permanent.
Okay, so now that's not to say that a Mishkan doesn't have elements of Mikdash in it. Right. When it's there, it's sometimes they were in Kadesh Barnea for how long, right? For 20 years. So it seems to be permanent, right? It wasn't taken down and put up all that time. Mm-hmm. So, but this is the question that Or HaChaim asks. Tzarech lodas lama karo Mikdash v'tekev chazeh b'vakar Mishkan. Why does Hashem call it a Mikdash and then afterwards turn around and basically say, no, it's a Mishkan? Mm-hmm. Right, that what is the definition of a Mikdash? Mikdash is something, like I said before, permanent, that it's going to be when they get into the land, as long as they are there in the land of Israel for Doros, for generations, that's a Mikdash. And the Bnei Yisrael need to make a mikdash. Right? What do we call shul? A mikdash
meat.
Right? Even when you're in exile. So he says the problem is that God forbade that from the time there is a beis hamikdash, you can't make a portable mishkan. Right? We should have a mishkan, but where are we going to have a mishkan? We're everywhere. Okay, so maybe we should each have our own little mishkan. Okay, whatever. So, but it says asar. Hashem said you can't do it. It's in Dvarim, it's in Re'eh, that once you come into the land, that's it. No more of this Mishkan business. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, it did not say that, and they shall make the Mishkan. And that's why it doesn't say they should make a Mishkan, which would imply that the only time for making this mitzvah is in the time of the wilderness. Right? It doesn't say v'asuli mishkan, because that would mean it's a one-time mitzvah just for the wilderness. Yeah. Rather, it says v'asuli mikdash. Uh-huh. Okay? So first it says v'asuli mikdash. In other words, wherever you find yourself, you have to make some semblance of a mikdash. Okay? In the times of the... when you're living in the land of Israel, it'll eventually be a basic mikdash, right? Once it's destroyed and there's exile, so it's going to be a mikdash mat. But you have to have a mikdash. But if it just said mishkan, then that's it. Mishkan, one-time deal. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. So mikdash is klal. It's a general idea. Mishkan is prat, is specific for that time place. You can't build a building of stone when you're traveling in the wilderness. That the Rambam lists as a mitzvah the idea to build a Beis Mikdash, and that is where does that come from? From the instructions to build a Mishkan, right? But the pasuk says and he proves it because the language changes. Because it says Vasul Mikdash, and then it says Ace Tabnis Mishkan. Oh, you say Bomra Vasul Mikdash? Gimesha Usmasalishmalis Barak, Ramali, Hagam, Shadain, Lo, Shar Saboshkina, Harehu, Mikdash, Vidin, Kodesh, Yeshlo. Okay, so what does that mean? That even if God's Shechina has not yet rested there, it can still be considered a mikdash based on what you're doing. Right? You're making it as a shul. It's a shul. It has kedusha. So this is the most famous line in all of Parshas Truma. Everybody says that God says, "I will dwell b'socham in them." He doesn't say, "I will dwell in it," meaning in the Mishkan. Lomar shamakom asher or the mikdash. Lomar shamakom asher gishu l'shchino yeah b'soch b'nei Yisrael. Shekipu mishkan medal d'galim. What he's trying to say is that I'm going to live among them. What does that mean, among them? That the place which they designate to be for his shchina, b'shachanti, God says, I will dwell. So l'shochno to basically dwell is not a word. To have God's Shechina present. They have to circle the camp with the circle of Mishka with the four camps. That maybe what the Bnei Yisrael wanted to do was to imitate what they saw, that there were four camps of Malachim basically surrounding Har Sinai. They wanted to have the same thing. So this is where the answer comes from, the seer, the tester of all hearts. And he says, that what God is saying is, you make for me a mikdash, or they make for me a mikdash, then I will dwell among them the same way that I dwelled among the angels at Sinai. Okay, and by the way, it's extremely clear, but from the very last two psukim in the book of Shemos, that the Mishkan is taking the place of Sinai. Okay, you just have to compare the end of... We've made this point before, okay? I focus on it every year. When you have to just see how the very end of last week's parsha, when Moshe goes up the mountain and Moshe gets called from God and he's able to enter the cloud, how the cloud is on top of the mountain, and that's Moshe, and you're going to see at the very end of the book of Shemos, after Moshe builds the Mishkan, how the cloud is there, and Moshe can't enter as long as there's a cloud and there's a 7-day period, which is the same thing that happened at Har Sinai. And the only way Moshe can come in is when he gets called. He does not get called at the very end of the book of Shemos. But what's the very next word after the book of Shemos in the Torah? Vayikra al Moshe. Okay, he's called. So that's how you see that there's a parallel going on. And then it happens again. Because what's Vayikra? What's Vayikra until Parsha Shemini? Again, a 7-day period. Preparation, and then the Yom HaShemini when everything comes together. So it's very clear. It's very clear. And the Ramban says this, by the way, and I believe it's a Parshas Truma. Chvod Hashem. I don't know, what does he say? Something about the Chvod Hashem fills the Mishkan, or Shochein Alav Benistar. And it's kind of, it's there in a hidden way, but basically mimicking what took place at Har Sinai. Okay, so that's our introduction. Now, The next part, which we're not going to read inside, but if you just look at the next pasuk, we already read the pasuk. So what the Or HaChaim does here, and I gave it to you in italics because I know some of you like to look at it, Okay, he talks about how you see what the pasuk says. God says, everything that I'm showing you, that's what you guys should do. Okay, now what do we know about the building of the Mishkan? Who builds the Mishkan? Moshe? Moshe? No, Moshe is two... what's the equivalent of green thumbs for a carpenter? Okay?
All thumbs.
Right, all thumbs, right? Moshe, meaning Moshe may have been handy. We don't know. The fact of the matter is that God says... You know, Vayimaleo so Ruach Elohim regarding Bezalel. God assigns this wisdom and this ability to this ability, not disability, this ability to supervise the instruction of the Mishkan and to actually do the Melechas Machasheves, all the professional work to Bezalel and to Aliyav and the people who they're overseers over. But Moshe does not have that. And yet the Torah says that everything that is supposed to be done is something that God showed to Moshe. In other words, to Moshe alone. So what does that mean regarding Bezalel? How on earth did Bezalel know what to do? And so that's what the Aruch Chaim talks about. And he uses different sources. You could see at the very beginning of this section, he quotes the Gemara in Brachos, that essentially, Bezalel was given a kind of intuition similar to that which Moshe received, and that's why his name became Bezalel. His name was not Bezalel. His name was changed. Bezalel ben Uri. What does Bezalel mean? Literally, in the shadow of God. In the shadow of God. And so he was given the inspiration that Moshe was actually given to the vision to see, and that's how Bezalel was able to do it. And it's beautiful, but.
Question?
But it's time consuming.
How old is he?
Yeah, that's a great question. Bezalel is.
What have you heard?
Young.
Yeah.
Bar mitzvah.
Bar mitzvah?
Probably, but still young. Because what is he? Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. Okay, well, we don't know how. Do we know how old Hur is?
Wait, this was post Tarsina.
Who's Hur? Who's Hur? Hur is the son of Kalev. That's the.
Who was he married to?
Hur was the son of Miriam.
Son of Miriam.
Okay, that's what we get, I believe, from Divrei Yamim. So in Divrei Yamim, we get that that Miriam and Kalev were married, and they had a son named Hur. And the thing is, we know how old Kalev is now. That's the kicker. We know because of the book of Yoshua. Because in the book of Yoshua, which is 40 years later, Kalev says, when I was a spy, I don't remember the exact year, somewhere between 40 and 45. Okay, I believe he says I was 45, and now it's 40 years later, and I'm 85, and you're giving me the land of Hebron because that was what was promised to me. So, let's assume Kalev here is 45. Okay, Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur, and Hur is the son of Kalev. Okay, that's the problem.
We don't know.
No, so that means Kalev is a great grandfather. Bezalel ben Uri. Ben Hur, Ben Kalev. He's a great grandfather at 45. Mm-hmm. Now you should know that I met a lady once when I went skiing with my wife. We had one child at the time, and the lady who was running the daycare, so she was watching at the time our little baby. She was 26 years old, and she had, I don't remember if it was a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old daughter. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right, not surprising, right? And I was like, that's so interesting. She says, yeah, we're like sisters, but she has to remember that I'm the boss, I'm her mom. I'm like, okay, whatever. And she would not have been upset if her daughter had followed in her footsteps, which would mean that she could become a grandma by the time she's 26.
That's
right? Wow. Right? Totally possible. Which means that if the new child follows in the footsteps, then she could become a great-grandma
60,
by the time that she's 40.
Wow.
Okay, so it's not crazy. So what does that? So what does that mean? What does that mean? That means that these people, they could be having children when they're 13 years old. Basically, is what we're concluding. But of course, it also means that that great grandchild has to be old enough to be able to do things, which means that we're actually moving back a little bit. So they have to be even younger, and that goes back to the whole Yehuda Tamar discussion. About how Peretz is already a father when they come down to Egypt. How does that happen?
No,
I mean, that's the Gemara talks about it. I think it's the Gemara Sotah talks about that how the people, they were procreating at a younger age. They had to have been.
Okay.
Had to have been. Yeah, exactly. Wow. You know, okay. There you go. Anyway, so in talking about all this, he says, talking about that inspiration, so I gave you the V'derech Remez Yirmos. Okay, we're on page 3 now. V'derech Remez Yirmos Akasub Yom Rabbe Seder Zed, Shigdim V'shechan Tibu Zocham, Kodem Omro Kechol. Remember the Pasuk? The Pasuk says, V'asuli Migdash V'shechan Tibu Zocham, make for me a Migdash, and I will dwell amongst them. Kechol Asher Ani Morei Oschai, Stavid Nitzam Mishkan. So the, like all that I have shown you, is what you're going to be doing. So he says that God said, I will dwell amongst them, Rabbi Socham, before he said, like all, kechol, right? Kechol asher ani, like all that I've shown you. Lomar lo, inyan gadol, to teach him something very big. Ki bechinas hakedusha, v'adragosel, lo begedar ha-mesaper, ki gavol me'al gavol goyim. He says that the concept of kedusha and its different levels and stages is not about it's probably a mispar. Okay, lo begedar mispar. It's not something which you can put a number on, right? Quantify. Ki gavo mi'al gavo gavoim. Right? When we're talking about Kedusha, Kedusha is just, you know, like Shlomo Krabach used to say, the highest of the high, right? Halotim tzaum ramzal, achar she yoshev ozik b'torah, echad she yoshev ozik b'torah, shechina imo. What do the rabbis say? That somebody who sits and studies Torah, the shechina is with him. Shnei ramachol makom she yizkir shmi. Like the pasuk says, wherever my name is remembered, right? Avoy lachu v'raktich. All right, I'm going to come and I will bless you. V'yamru albeiz v'gimel hey asara v'chol echad kafi adrogaso. So it can happen at any level. V'yamru od. Shein eshchina shara pachas mishishim ribo is another idea in Bereshis Rabba that the shechina does not rest on anything less than shishim ribo, 600,000. Which is what the Bnei Yisrael were at Sinai. Ki mitam zeh lo nitna Torah le'avos ad sheh yo banim yisrael shishim ribo. Right? And the proof to that is that the avos didn't get the Torah. Why? Too few. Too few in terms of numbers of people. You needed to have an Am Yisrael. An Am Yisrael made up of shishim ribo. Mikan takish v'tadir. She says, now you have to make comparisons. You need to, you know, basically judge out, like figure this stuff out. Yeah, dragos adragos and kedusha. Hey, me echad ad shishim ribo. He says the different levels of kedusha go from 1 to 600,000. Okay, what does that mean? Yeah. Echus. Remember what echus is?
Length.
No, echus is no. That's arichus. Echus is quality. Correct. Okay. I always have to remember that because I know kamus is quantity. So when I say I have to think it, kamus is quantity, echus is quality. Okay, right. Ubechinas echus. And in terms of quality, kama adragos me or hadargos me echad leechad at enkates from 1 to 1 until enkates until there's no end. Vechevan shekain kasher mar Hashem leMoshe shishkom besochenu lo yedam Moshe hadargos shel ubechinas hashochen, because when God says, I'm going to be dwelling amongst the Bnei Israel, Moshe did not know what levels we're talking about. What are the Bechinas HaShochein? Like what are the requirements? What does God plan to do? Kemo Shiura, like what's the amount? Zenes Chakem Hashem Adiber Elav Kedivar Ma'ila V'Shachanhi V'Sochamen. So God realized that Moshe had questions, which he was not articulating. And he says to him, V'Shachanhi V'Sochamen. What do you mean? I'm going to dwell amongst them. Kechol Asher Ani Moreh Oscha Samach. I will dwell like in every way that I'm showing you. Lomar, ki osa b'china medaberesimo keshir osa amir kava asher yumarev yishkom b'socham. That this aspect of God which is speaking to him, and in a way which is a different kind of vision, that is what's going to dwell amongst the people. Chavizat yeb niksheres tevas kechol im v'shachanti. So what does that mean? It should be V'shachanti b'socham k'chol asher ani mareh oscha. Okay, that I will dwell amongst them as I show you everything. Okay, and I'm not completely getting where he's taking that in terms of what is the message to the people. But I think what the Aruch Haim is just trying to tell us is that God is trying to preempt a concern that the people are going to have, or something that they should be worried about in terms of what it means to have God's Kedusha present. You have to have them present. Okay, so this is Derech Remez, and he had other explanations as well, and I took most of them away, but I just wanted to open your eye to the idea that there is this element of Kedusha which is being introduced and explained about here, which is something of significance and not something to be ignored. Now, you see what I wrote in here on page 3 in the middle? Very lengthy arichus. Now, I was thinking, should I write very lengthy arichus? You know what arichus means?
Length.
A very lengthy, length. You know, thing. So but it's an extremely lengthy arichus, and that's why I doubled it. It's a very lengthy arichus about the Mizbeach. Now, what he does here, and this is really an introduction to the one paragraph from this thing about the Mizbeach, the two paragraphs that I gave you, or actually, I still gave you a few of them, even though I took out a lot of it.
We're going through this?
Yeah, we're going to go through what we have. Is this, because this is not so much, this is not about the Mizbeach here. The Mizbeach part I skipped. This is about the Kruvim. Okay, what the Or HaChaim does is he compares the way the Mishkan's instruction and actualization, in other words, the way that it is built and the way that it's put together, to the way the Beis HaMikdash was put together in the time of Shlomo. Where do we have that information from? We have a lot of it in Melachim Aleph, okay? Right? After David dies and Shlomo takes over, so he builds the Beis HaMikdash not in the first two chapters, but...
Well, what happened to the Mishkan when they built the...
Well, the Mishkan was destroyed at the time of Eli. That's why Eli died, if you remember the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, the Mishkan was Mishkan Shiloh.
Right.
There were several Mishkans, by the way, because some of them were destroyed by the enemies. But the but Mishkan Shiloh, I believe, was the last one.
Last of all?
Yeah, I think like 300
yeah,
years. But When Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash is built, the Torah says at the end of Niketz, which Monim V'Arbameos Shana, it says at the end of 480 years. It doesn't say what the beginning of the 480 years was. It says, let's say it's Beneis Yom HaMikdash, but it's a little complicated because how you calculate that, because the book of Shoftim, it seems that the judges in the periods of Shoftim, that there was some overlap. It wasn't like, meaning, because they were in different areas, they were in different regions of the country. And so, yeah, so anyway, it's an arichus. It's a long study to try to figure all that stuff out and to figure out, you know, what, when the Torah, when the Navi rather describes when Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. And of course, it took a bunch of years to actually build it. So, what does it mean at the end of 480 years? Does it mean the end of 480 years is when they put down the cornerstone, or is the end of 480 years when they actually finished the construction? So anyway, there's a lot to look into over there, but it's that question that, you know, for example, the Mizbeach, mm-hmm, of the Mishkan was made out of wood and was covered with nechoshes. It was covered with copper. The Mizbeach in Shlomo's time was made of other material. I don't remember which, but the point is that it wasn't supposed to follow the dimensions of this.
Yeah, it was different.
This was
bad. Different.
No, it was much bigger,
yeah,
because the volume that you're dealing with was much bigger. And so he addresses like how you take the instructions from here and apply them to whatever Shlomo did. Okay, and one of the conclusions that he gets to, of course, is that everything which Shlomo did was through the instruction of a Navi, which I don't remember if I gave that to you here as well, but we'll see. Okay, so let's take a look. Okay, v'nira ki hakasav rumizam b'masha amar v'yasisa shnayim kruvim ishnei ketzos hakaporas v'asei kruvichad u'kruvichad. So what's he talking about now? Okay, so this actually we should look at the pesukim. So let's take a small turn of a page. Okay, top of page 448. I don't remember if he skipped in the pesukim because we're still in pasuk ches, but he did not. But you should just know what it's talking about.
He quotes it.
Right. No, I know that he quotes it, but I'm saying, but the next source which I gave you... Oh, no, I went backwards. Just to show you that I don't know. No, the next is Pasuk Yud. Okay, so this is all in his commentary on Pasuk Tes. This it's really, really long. It's really, really long. Okay, so take a look at what it says here. Let's see. Okay, we're on page 448. So it's describing the making of the kaporis. The kaporis is the cover for the ark. Yasisa shnayim kruvim zahav. You have to make two kruvim, right, out of gold. Miksha ta'aseh osam shneiktsos kaporis. So it has to be out of a solid piece of gold from the edges of the kaporis. Va'aseh kruv echad mikatsa mizeh, kruv echad mikatsa mizeh. You have to make one kruv on the edge on this side and one kruv on the edge on this side. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many kruvim have been described?
Two. Four in total? Am I right? Four?
Well, it's not a question of if you're right. It's a question of whether it's suggested.
So,
okay?
Does that make sense?
That's two.
Right.
True.
Right, shnayim kruvim zahav miksha ta'aseh osam shnei ketzos hakaporos. You just said make them from the two edges of the kaporos. What's the next pasuk say? Make one kruv from one edge, one kruv from another edge.
Right.
Mina kaporos tasu. It's the same thing you just said in the previous pasuk. Right? Yeah. Look at the next pasuk. Vayu akruvim porsek nefayim lemal. You should have kruvim which are with their wings spread up. So chachim bekaveim al kaporis. Now, in the Mishkan, in the Mikdash rather, Shlomo's Mikdash, the pasuk is very clear that in addition to the ark, there were two separate kruvim in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Basically, they were elevated on poles, and their wings spread across the whole room. Okay, instead of being like towards the kaporis. Towards
they
the ark.
They make it out of the kaporos? Seems from this that...
No, there are kruvim that are part of the kaporos. Turn back a page. Look at the classic, you know, there's a classic drawing of what the ark looks like. Okay?
Yeah.
Turn back a page, yeah. So that's kruvim. But the point is that it's open to the interpretation that there are additional kruvim. Okay, were they in the Mishkan? No. But... if Shlomo is using this as his blueprint, then he can say, all right, there's hints in here for what you do when you have a permanent structure. Okay, that's the point.
Wow.
Okay, v'nira ki akasub ramazam b'masha amar v'yosisa shenayim kruvim mishnek tzos hakaporas v'yasei kruv echad v'kash lama utzrach lamar beis v'me ma'asa v'yosisa v'asei. Like, why does it say, you shall make and you shall make? Thank you! Tell us once, I got it. Old kasha, another question. Shekol kasev mutar, kimi amro mi beis ksoes hakaporos uvan shu kruv echad mi kaseh. Right, the second, like I showed you that the second pasuk is totally extra. You said you're going to make two kruvim from the edges, and then you don't have to tell me one kruv from one edge and one kruv from another edge. Old kasha lama amar od al shnei ksoesav. Why does it say again on the two edges? Thank you, we got it. Achein ramas Hashem lemas beis kruv mishiyasav beis olamim. Beis olamim does not mean a cemetery here. It refers to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? He says that this is a hint to the two kruvim which are going to be made in the Beis HaMikdash. Milavad kruvim shiasa Moshe. Seven from the kruvim that Moshe is going to make. What do you mean that Moshe is going to make? That whoever is going to make under Moshe's instruction, right? Keneged ma shiasa shlefisha amar yasisa lenocha ki yasa mishkan. So now we have to go look at the pasuk again. Take a look at pasuk Yitzayin. V'yasisa Yitzayin, right? V'yasisa Kaporas. V'yasisa, I'm sorry, I meant Pasuk Yitzchas. V'yasisa Shnaim Kruvim, right?
Yeah.
That's one instruction. Look at the next Pasuk. V'asei Kruv Echad Mikatsa Mizeh, Kruv Echad Mikatsa Mizeh. Okay, V'yasisa and V'asei.
Yeah.
So, okay. V'kenegeh Kruvei Beis Olamim, V'shar Ramaz V'tchiyas Tvarav, Amar V'asei. So that was in the middle of the sixth line. Okay, that was the sixth line. And with regard to the kruvim that are going to be in the base of Mikdash, there's a hint in the pasuk which says, "Va'asei lo dibra alav lenochach ela kemitzvah al asiyah acheres." He wasn't repeating what's being said here, but it's a mitzvah for a different creation of different kruvim. It's man acher. For a different time, shemilvad beis kruvim on his kareem shehem miktzos hakaporos od yasu maase acher kruv echad mikatzam izeh, that there's going to be a different time and place where there's going to be a kruv on one edge and a kruv on another. Ve'elohim b'fnei atzmon k'mo shekein asam Shlomo, and that is what Shlomo did, making these separate things. Shayu raglaim nogim ba'aretz, the feet of these kruvim were in the ground. Ve'lo b'ktzei hakaporos, and they were not on the edge of the cover of the ark. U'perish mikatzav makom. She kila kitzaso. What does it mean that they were at the edge? Where the edge ends, right? In other words, the ark was placed in between these two kruvim. V'ulai sheniskavim etevas mizeh lomar milavadze v'chozer el kruv sheniskar, which means that what he had in mind was to refer to the kruv which was mentioned earlier, or shehizkir rather. Right, he says, or you can read it the other way. Okay, that they're going to be on the edge, and then it says, that's referring to the ones which were going to be made under Moshe's instruction. Okay, so in other words, he's just saying that if you assume that the kruvim that are being described here are not a reed, because it's giving us a heads up on a different set of kruvim which are going to be made at a different time, then you know you can pick which one is referring to Moshe's kruvim on the ark, mm-hmm. and which is going to be Shlomo's kruvim in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Okay, so I mean, that part doesn't really matter, but the point is that it's separate things. Okay, skip. I don't know if I don't remember what I got up to. I figured on the place, so we're going to skip now to the third to last line in the middle. V'odiyer Hashem l'avincha kein b'mash amar esakruvim shelo yitzarich lazkirim kevin shebehem huosek. Right, and another thing that God is showing us is that he keeps referring to the kruvim, which he doesn't need to keep mentioning, because he's clearly talking about them. V'lo yelo lomar elo ta'aseim, o ta'aseh osam. Right, we're already talking about the kruvim here. Remember, and then you don't have to say osam. You don't have to. You're already talking about them. We know what the subject of the discussion is. So therefore, he says, "Gila she'enu medaber b'mashal lefanav, elo b'mashal lefnei banav." K'mosh perashnu, that he's not talking about what is just before him. It's something else, as you've seen. Omro, al shnei, turn the page. Pitzosav, herush tzarech sheyamdu al tzeh kaporos. Shelo tamar hein emes yume gufosh kaporos. Avol efshar sheyadei lemaragliyam yadei baretz lo kaporos. Okay, so again, he's just showing how the imagine that this is the ark in the base of Mikdash, and here's the kodesh kodeshim. That one kruv is going to be placed over here on this edge. One kruv is going to be placed over here on this edge. Okay, this is here's the curtain from the Kodesh HaKodeshim into the base of Mikdash. Okay, so you have these standing kruvim; they're implanted, like basically on poles, or the feet of the kruv are in the ground, and that is what you have, and it just hovers over the ark. Aside from the kruvim, which are on the kaporis, which are on the ark. Okay, so now take a look at the next paragraph here. Actually, no. So I don't want to do that. He talks about Bezalel and Bezalel's role here. That's fine. What I wanted to do is now show you the next thing here. Okay, the next paragraph. Okay, Mizbach Hazav Matzinu Sha'asa Shlomo Acher V'Ganaz L'Shlomo. So he says now the Ark was the same Ark.
Right.
The Shulchan, same Shulchan. Menorah, same Menorah. Now the truth is, in the Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash there were multiple menorahs. I don't remember if it was 10 or 12. There were a lot of menorahs. Absolutely. But you know why there are a lot of menorahs? Well, they were able to have windows in the base of Mikdash, but still, the windows were not supposed to be all that big for a whole host of reasons. But what's the point of a menorah in the Mishkan? Mikdash? It's obvious.
Light?
To give light. To give light. Okay? Shulchan, I think they also had multiple shulchans. Because remember, what's the purpose of the shulchan? To provide bread for... Well, lechem apanim, but what happens to lechem apanim when they take it off? Right, the kohanim get to use it. Well, there are a lot more kohanim later on than there were in the Mishkan. So in the Mishkan, you only needed one. Who are you feeding? Aaron's family and a couple. You know, he's got a couple sons, and that's it. But later on, you needed more. So fine. So they're adding additional ones. Okay. What about the mizbech hazav? The mizbech hazav is a small mizbech which is used for the burning of spices. So remember. The big mizbeach can't use it. Okay, it's portable and it's for a limited volume. It's just simply because it needs to be carried. But once you go into Beis HaMikdash territory, so you're not using the big mizbeach. But what about the small mizbeach, the one which is used for burning spices? I mean, it's just spices, right? Does it really have to be that much bigger? Look what he says: mizbeach hazav matzinu she'asa Shlomo acher v'ganaz l'shem Moshe. That he made another one and he put Moshe's in Geniza. As the Gemara Menachah says, Shashulchan Menorah Shasa Moshe Yesh B'Machlokas Im Lo Yumisajim Madlikin Elabo Ogam B'Shar Shulchanos Menorah Shasa Shlomo How Yumisajim Madlikin Lefamim. Okay, so the question was: did they only use Moshe's, or did they have a rotation, or did they use all of them? Okay, Aval Mizbeach Hazahav Davar Muskam Shenignaz Ulo Shem Shal B'Shal Shlomo. But with regard to the small mizbeach, everyone agrees that they got rid of it, and that they used Shlomo's mizbeach. But tzarech ladas lama ganas shel Moshe. Okay, so now we have to understand. If the menorah can be used, if the shulchan can be used, it's just a small mizbeach. What do you burn on it? I'm saying, but what do you burn on it? Spices. It's not like a volume of animals. The number of spices doesn't change. It's not like, oh, there are more people, now we're doing more ketores. Right? That doesn't change. It's the... animals can change. Volume of people. Fine. So we understand that. But anyway. V'nira ki ha-Torah ramza ha-davar ma-sheik seder mitzvahs mizbeach ha-zahav b'makam sh'ayroi l'tzavos alav. Okay? He says that maybe this is hinted to, that this Mizbeach HaZahav only has a limited shelf life or usage life. Why? Where is the instruction for the Mizbeach HaZahav? I'll tell you where it should be. You should see the Aron. Take a look, right? Page 446 rather, had the Aron. 448 has the Kaporas and the Shulchan. Turn the page. Next one is the Menorah. Okay? Next one is the Mishkan. Wait a second, the Mishkan. Okay, the Mishkan means the covers of the Mishkan. Then Revi is the Krushim, page 454. Yeah. Right, that's the beams that hold up, that are the walls. Okay, keep going. What's the next one? The Parochas, the curtain, the Shishi, you have the Mizbeach. That's the outside Mizbeach for the Karbanos, for the animal Karbanos. Then the Chatzer, the courtyard. Then we get into the Big Day Kahuna. All right. Then after the instructions to the Big Day Kahuna, it's at the end of Parsha Tzaveh. So it gives some instructions about what they're going to do. Karbanos, we're turning them into fun. Very last page of Parshas Tzaveh. Yasiza Mizbeach Maktir Ktoris. Not Maftir, but Shvi. Okay, Shvi. Yeah. That it's over there. So
doesn't follow the order,
right? I mean, so it begs a question: Why is this here? And by the way, it's not the only thing, because when you go on Parshas Kisisa, then it tells us Parshas Shkalim, right? Count the Shkalim, and then what does it say? Yasisa Kior. The Kior is thrown over there at the very end. So he doesn't talk about the Kior, but he does talk about the Small Mizbeach here. He might address the Kior next week's Parsha, but I didn't see it in this week's Parsha. So he asks this question, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so the fact that it took the Mizbeach HaZahav out from where it should have been right after the Shulchan, the Menorah, because it's placed right next to the Shulchan, the Menorah, in the actual Mishkan. Second line, second word, Kitin Sakim, Chiyu Hescha Ba'aro, Shehu Pnime Pnimiim. Right? The first instruction is for the Ark, which is in the inner sanctum. And then the cover. So we just saw all these because we went through everything. Okay, so I'm actually going to skip until the Mizbeach HaZahav. So we're on the fifth line now because we just saw all of that. Third word. So this, I mean, there's something big going on here.
Yeah.
Because why else would you have this change? Shadino Mishuna. So the hint is that it's law, right? It's the instructions for it are different. Mikala Mishkan Mechelav from everything else. And by the way, the Kiyor also, the Kiyor that Shlomo made was much bigger. Right? I mean, the Kiyor, the Mishkan was tiny. The Kiyor in Shlomo's time was huge. Why? A lot more Kohanim. Okay, so you need to have
the Be'achar. This makes sense with the Kiyor because it's in a different parsha.
Right. Okay.
So based on that instruction, you could argue. Right. You can see how.
Okay. So we can presume that he's going to make the same argument. V'ramas b'zeh shadino mishun mikol mishun mikelo ki mishun mikelo haroi the base alamim yishamesh the base alamim. What's worthy for the base of Mikdash can work at the base of Mikdash. Kigon hashulchan v'menorah kavoshu kesav nolamal shayim sham base alamim. Okay. So if it can work in the base of in the base of Mikdash, great. However, mishayin haroi the base alamim, if it can't work in the Mishkan. Kigon Mishkan vechelim, in the base of Mikdash rather, like the Mishkan and the vessels which were the portable ones. Shalosh shimshu Mikdash, gam mizbeach achitzon shaloyik akpada elaberi bua, uMikdash hayitzrichin laasoso gadol tzadetzorech. Right, and the same thing with the big mizbeach, they simply couldn't use it. Al mizbeach hazahav, gam shalot tishtana avodaso shu aktores. Even though the amount of the Ketores doesn't change, same amount, same volume of Ketores every day, right? It's in the morning and the evening. But nevertheless, it couldn't work in the Mishkan, in the base of Mikdash rather. So we made another one. And they buried it away completely. They made 10 like the one that Moshe had. He says it's a hint. Now, he doesn't really explain why this Mizbeach needed to go. And I don't remember what the Mizbeach in Shlomo's time was made of. The Mizbeach, well, you know, what we call the Mizbeach HaZahav, the Mizbeach for the Ketores. But I think that the point still is, remains in essence the same. that for whatever reason it was determined that it didn't work in this Mishkan, and therefore that idea in the Mikdash rather, and therefore that idea is hinted to in it being mentioned separately. There are better interpretations, by the way, for why the Mizbeach HaZahav is at the end. I think I wrote an article about this once. I probably looked into it. I don't remember what I wrote, but that's why. That's why we write it and save it and put it somewhere. Yeah, it was more than last week. But it's just fascinating stuff about what the significance of Ketores and how basically the Mishkan can't be put in order, can't be finalized until you have the Mizbeach HaKetores. Okay, so even the instruction for it, because everything else is just trimmings. What's the main purpose of the Mishkan?
To bring Kavaros.
Right, but let's say nobody has a karbon that day. I mean, there is a kevus achat haseh avoker, a kevus hasheni taseh ben arbayim. But what else? He just told us what the significant avoda of the Beis Hamikdash is, the daily ketores.
Yeah,
and one could even make the argument that we can make the argument. I don't know that we need to make the argument. But one could make the argument that the mizbeach haketores is something which is more for God. I think about what's the point of a carbon.
So
a carbon is for me. I did something wrong, or things are good, but I want to give thanks. But what's the ketores? So God gives me a way to do that. Okay, for good or for bad, right? That's what the carbonos are. But by and large, the ketores is not something that people are offering. This is something which is you got to do it because God said so. Well, that's what the Mishkan's all about. Okay, so. That's an important interpretation. Okay, we're going to probably conclude with this thing about the Aram. Okay, so it's just two more little paragraphs.
Okay.
And then whatever's in italics, we're just not going to get to. And that's fine. I will tell you, by the way, that the last thing on here, on page 6, he starts playing numbers games about how the curtains, if you remember the curtains, which are the covers for the Mishkan, were made up of smaller curtains, which were sewn together, and then the two larger curtains that were created from the five smaller curtains and the five smaller curtains, they were hooked together in the middle.
Yeah.
And with the goatskins, they did the same thing, 5 and 6. So 5 were sewn together, 6 were sewn together, and then they were hooked together in the middle in order to create the cover of the Mishkan. Now, I don't remember if the article actually has a drawing of this, of the Yirios. I don't think I saw it. In the, hold on. All right, so let's take a look at this, the last thing that we're going to be doing, which is Pasuk Yud. Okay? So I'm sorry we didn't, get very far, but that's typically what happens because everybody tries to look for a whole bunch of symbolism, meaning how does the Mishkan have relevance? The whole instruction for the Mishkan was for a one-time thing. We have 4 parshas dedicated to it. So everybody looks at the symbolism. Right, of course. So, Rav Hirsch, for example, talks deeply about the symbolism of everything, of every single item in the Mishkan. And a lot of the commentaries go in a similar kind of, how do I make this into something deeper? Aside from explaining, like pshat, like Rashi does a lot of pshat, trying to explain, did the Aron have 2 rings on each side, or 4 rings, did it have 1 set of poles, or did it have 2 sets of poles? There are a lot of questions like that. Exactly. What did the menorah look like? What did the shulchan look like? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's not our purpose this week. Okay? So but I want to look. So take a look. If you do that exercise again that we just had, for example, take a look at Pasuk Yud. It says, V'asu arom. And then for each other thing, it says, V'asisa shulchan. V'asisa menoras. V'asa mishkan ta'aseh. V'asisa asakarashim. V'asisa brichim. V'asisa. So what's V'asu?
Everyone has a share in it, right? The Kliokra said last year, 2 years ago when you taught it, that
right.
Everyone shares in the Torah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's his approach. Great. So that's one. That's certainly an answer. Let's see how the Or HaChaim goes to ask that, to address that question. And again, the question is, V'asu versus V'asisa. V'asu means, and they will make. Okay, V'asisa means, and you will make.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a look at what he says. Tam sheba Aron shino Hashem is devaro atov, mikol ha-kelim shebekulam. I'm sorry, Mikol HaKelim. The reason why in the Ark Hashem changed his instruction from all the other Kelim, because in all of them it says, V'asisa Shulchan, V'asisa Menoras, that you can you have to make the shulchan. You have to make the nar. Yes, mishkan ta'aser. Yes, he says it's there. Everything's in the singular. The gamav pirate aron atzmo gamar omar benochach to sivit tzipisa osav yatzakalo. Right. Eventually, it switches from viasu to the singular.
Singular.
Ulai sheramas she'en gufa shel Torah yachol iskaim el b'chol shel kol Yisrael. That the Torah can't sustain itself unless it's with all of Am Yisrael. Ve'en mitzias be'olam yachol asos kol kriyat Torah. And there's no entity in the world which could fulfill all of the details of the Torah. V'zeh l'chaos. And here's the sign. Right, for example, a Kohen can't do mitzvahs by giving things to a Kohen. Okay? Upidyan Bechor, he can't do Pidyan Aben. Right? I mean, he could be the channel for somebody else to do Pidyan Aben, but he doesn't do that. Vimu Yisrael, Reini Yachal Kai, mitzvahs to say, Sheba Akrava Sakarbanos. Right? Mitzvahs for Kohanim are unavailable to a Jew. Vidinehem, Asher Rabu mitzvahs asay, Shebehem Bechem Levi, close Kol Yisrael, Yikam close the Kriya Torah. Right, so you have, the only way that all of Am Yisrael can fulfill all the Torah is if all of Am Yisrael are involved in fulfilling the Torah. Zamar v'asu Lashon Rabu. Okay, that's a nice answer, right? That you need all of the people in order to do the Aron. Because what's the Aron? The Aron is a symbol of the Torah. But everything else, which is now talking about an actual vessel, then did I skip something?
No, you're good.
Okay. Amar Loshan Yachin Kli Torah Shem Lomdeh Lev Chanoseh Yichol Niskay Meadam Echad. Right, that everything that needs to be done can be done by individuals, but as far as it goes to fulfill the actual mitzvahs of the Torah, there you need everybody to be involved. Well, Ode. Another possibility, Ulai Shekaram Ledaber Lo Loshon Zeh, Legalos La Kol Maaseh Shagam Shem Daberim Bo Lenochach Lo Ela Ba Mitzvah El Lazolus Shem Chach Meleiv. Now God's talking to Moshe, but he's saying, "Hey, don't forget, you're just Moshe. Okay, you are not the Chacham Leiv in terms of the artisan. So Vyasu, they have to make it, and that basically puts Moshe." And not that Moshe is a problem here, but that it puts Moshe in his place, saying, you don't have to do it all. Okay, you don't have to do V'yasu, they're going to do it. And when I say V'yasisa, it means that you got to get it done, but it doesn't mean that you need to do it yourself. And why? And it's designated to him. Why? Because he's the one who's instructing Israel. All of you, Masha Amru Zal, Ki Aron, Eitz, Asa Moshe. Hashem Samaluchos, take up Yudasominahar. Also, because Moshe made an ark out of wood, and there is where he put the Luchos. Remember, from the time that Moshe comes down from the mountain with the Luchos, even the second set of Luchos, but even the first set of Luchos, even though he broke them, they gathered the pieces. So, even according to the most extreme view, Moshe comes down from the mountain with the second set of Luchos on Yom Kippur. From the time that Moshe comes down with Luchos until the dedication of Mishkan, which is the first month, which is Nisan. Do the math. How many months are we talking about? Almost 6 months. So, where are the Luchos in the interim? They are in a box that Moshe had, and he kept in his closet, in his tent, which is sometimes referred to as the Ol Moed. So, right, and that's what he's saying here. Misham, son of Luchos, that's where he put the Luchos. Take it, Yerudasom in Ahar, on the fourth line there, on page 5, the second paragraph. Take it, Yerudasom in Ahar. So immediately after he came down from the mountain, until Bezalel made the ark in which the Luchos were eventually placed. V'chein Amar Parshas Ekev, Yasisa, Lecha, Aron Eitz. What's an Aron Eitz?
Wooden.
Right, just a plain wooden box. Digdek lamar lecha v'asisa lecha. Moshe, you have to make it for you. Why? Because this right now it's your. I heard this about. There was a. I think I've told this story before. There was a. In the 90s, there was a movie called The Piano, and there was a little girl at that time. She's now no longer a little girl because this movie was made 25 years ago. Her name was Anna Paquin. Okay, and she was in this movie. And she won an Oscar. One of the youngest people ever to win an Oscar. I think she was 12 when she got it. You know what she did with her Oscar?
in her closet?
She kept it in her closet. You know why? Because she's a little girl. She had friends. She's going to come in and say, oh, look at my Oscar, right? I mean, okay, you know, you're too cool for me. So she kept it in her closet. Moshe has the luchos, lahavdil, you know, many of them. And Moshe has the luchos. What's he gonna do with the luchos? Like, I mean, you know, if you have a mishkan, fine. So we know we're gonna keep it, but we don't have a mishkan. So what's he gonna do with it? Hey guys, I got these stones. I mean, like, he's gonna put them on his mantle. You know, people walk into his house and they see his fireplace. Ooh, look at these luchos. Like, where are you gonna put them? You can't. Like, oh, you got these from God. Oh, that's very nice. Oh, that's interesting. It's a nice talking piece. Better to put him away somewhere, right? So he puts it in his closet. He puts it in his little ark, in his little box, in his personal box. Mm-hmm. Every other V'yasisa is Moshe. You have to instruct it over to Metzalah. But Dabar Zeh L'cha Anim Tzameh L'asos. But this ark, the one out of wood, you have to make. And so indeed he did it, as the pasuk says there in Devarim. Va'as Aron atzei shitim uchsiv va'asimus haluchos ba'aron asher tisi. Moshe says, I made the ark out of wood. I placed the luchos in the ark that I made. Asher al kein amar kan v'yasu perush milavad ma'ash teyasel ata shulufisha od yasu osim. So v'yasu means, aside from what you are going to make now, because you have to make an immediate ark. V'yasu aron means, yeah, you're going to, if I say v'yasisa, I told you v'yasisa for a different ark. So you have to make an ark, that one's for you. Every other v'yasisa that I say, you're pointing that one off. But this one you mamish have to make. So the v'yasu, therefore, is distinguishing between Moshe's ark that he needs to make himself, the temporary one, and the one that they need to make, which is a different ark.
Okay.
Okay. V'imay omer v'asisa yisover Moshe ladun mima shegila lo ba'aron shelvisha sheyemi shelo gam ezeh yeh davar kein. So Moshe would have assumed that if he has to make this ark, that he has to make this other ark, and it's also his. O yachshob sheyeh osa aron atzmo shekvar asa. Or he might think, oh yeah, I already made an ark. Oh, no problem, I already made one. But that's why l'zeh amar lo chein hu v'asu. And that's why God told, no, that wasn't the case. You have to make a new one. V'shar ma'as and shaloi ma'as and zulas ha'amur davar ha'kasu k'darka v'yasisa lomar shazchus mechun l'moshe gam shachirim osim. Every other thing where there isn't a contradiction, right? With the ark, there was a separate instruction for a different ark. And so therefore, it couldn't say v'yasisa. But every other v'yasisa is, you're going to make it, Moshe, but you're going to delegate. And that is in fact of course what Moshe does. But again, the attention is being made on V'yasu. So we saw two nice interpretations. One is that everybody needs to participate in the fulfillment of the mitzvahs, because that's the only way Am Yisrael could do it all. And the other one is that we're distinguishing between the other ark. I wrote an article about the other ark also, the two arcs of Moshe. So you can just go to my blog, you'll find it all. Okay, now, we're not doing another thing inside, but I did want to just let you know that in the next one, which is in italics, he goes deeper into this matter of the ark. Okay, so you know, like last week, once again, there isn't a whole lot of narrative, and he does really great with the interpretations when there's narrative, but we got a different kind of glimpse of Parshas Truma.
Where'd you get this?